When it comes to hard work, there's one important rule. Pick the right tool for the right job. That's why Chevy offers a family of Silverado pickup trucks designed just for the job. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and put a Silverado in your toolbox.
Illinois lawmakers were burning the midnight oil, going into overtime as they missed the midnight deadline to adjourn the spring legislative session. They got a lot done, though, it looks like. They passed a bunch of things. There's a $42 billion budget. They made some moves that I think we all should care about. Let's find out more about them. Rick Pearson from the Chicago Tribune joins us, our friend. And, Rick, I heard that when Pete asked you if you could come on the show, you said, well, I don't know how coherent I'll be, but I'll come on with you.
Well,
how's it going?
Bedtime was 5:30 this morning, so, yeah.
Wow.
The Senate finished up about 3 o'clock this morning. They're back at work. The House is finished until we're not exactly sure when they'll be coming back because of some late disputes that surfaced over a couple of issues.
What's the big stuff that we all should know about that got done?
Well, I mean, one, I would say at the top of the list is the redistricting for the legislature and the new boundaries, and people are going to be learning more about these in the coming weeks about where they live and who their legislative candidates are going to be. Basically, because of the changes in population and the fact that Democrats want to keep their control in the General Assembly, they try to maximize their numbers at the expense of Republicans. So that's one thing to watch. The fact that we got a state budget is a good thing. I mean, we went through a couple of years under the previous governor where we didn't have a budget, $42 billion budget. One thing of interest is the state got over $8 billion in federal pandemic relief from the feds. We were told we couldn't use it to pay for any kind of debt or anything, but the economy, surprisingly enough, is just skyrocketing here in Illinois, and tax receipts are coming in very good. So they're going to use about a million of that for basically Democratic pet projects in Democratic districts for infrastructure repairs for roads and bridges and things. So as you are looking at these new legislative districts, you're going to be seeing perhaps these new Democratic lawmakers cutting ribbons in these new boundaries for new projects. Still a couple of things that election change. We're going to be moving the primary to January 28th, the end of January, rather than March 15th. This will be interesting the way it kind of plays out for campaigning. This will give more time for candidates to surface. They don't have to really start filing for office until March. So this might open the door for, with the new districts for the legislature, might open the door for new political candidates to surface. A couple of things that didn't get done, efforts to try to streamline the FOID card process. The state with a huge, huge backlog of processing firearms owner ID cards. There were attempts made to encourage people to voluntarily submit fingerprints as part of the application. And then when you actually had to go through a background check to get a gun, the card would automatically be extended for 10 years. That went by the wayside, as well as efforts to provide the state police with more money to process these cards. Mm-hmm. Energy policy is a big, big hang up, and that's kind of why the legislature is gone, but not really. Efforts to negotiate with Exelon over the fate of its nuclear fleet, Exelon saying that they're going to have to shut down nuclear plants unless they get more ratepayer subsidies, higher electric bills, basically. The state, of course, under Pritzker, wants to become carbon-free basically by 2035 for energy sources. State can't do it unless you have those nuke plants. But Exelon kind of playing hardball and wanting more money than what the state is proposing in its latest plan. That's really the big hang-up right now, and that's kind of caused some rifts between the House and the Senate and the governor's office among Democrats. So while they're all kind of pleased with the work that got done with housing, affordable housing assistance, other things to try to help people bridge through this post-pandemic period. They're not all singing kumbaya right now.
No, I don't get that sense at all. You mentioned moving the primary for the elections. My understanding is they moved to May, and then with the actual election being June from March, which I don't know. Is this weather driven or no? What's the deal?
No, the primary will be in June. It normally would be March 15th, but it's going to be moved to June 28th.
Okay, so and why?
The real deal is because the Democrats have not yet drawn congressional redistricting maps. We lose one seat in Congress from 18 to 17 because of the population changes around the country. That map hasn't been redrawn. Part of the problem is that the census data doesn't come out until mid-August. And because it's a federal map, it's much more ripe to a federal challenge for voting rights or one person, one vote rules. So they want to use the good, hard census data to draw these maps. The trouble is, when that census data comes out in mid-August, under the current calendar, the first day to start circulating candidacy petitions is the end of August. So the calendar just doesn't work that way. This is a way to push things back, allows the Democrats to get plenty of time to review the census data, go through the inevitable legal hurdles that'll take place. But some good at other things with this election bill is people who vote by mail, they can ask to be put on a registry where they permanently get to vote by mail and that they will automatically get a ballot in the mail. Election centers for people to be able to vote regardless of whatever precinct they live, that'll be authorized. A curbside early and election day voting will be made permanent under this. So a lot of kind of the changes that were made to try to accommodate voters during the pandemic times of last year's election are actually going to be made into permanent law, as well as Election Day, November 8th, the general election being a state and school holiday as an effort to be able to use school facilities as polling places.
How nice. Oh, I noticed Cocktails to Go got the okay with the unanimous bipartisan support. Surprise. We can agree on something.
Well, yeah. And frankly, there were very few of those types of bills. But yeah,
right.
Cocktails to Go. And frankly, one of the things that this was tied to was also the shot for shot, where between once signed by the governor, between June 10th and July 10th, bars can offer one free cocktail to people showing that they've received their vaccination. And then you've got a two-year extension on the Cocktails to Go, which I think, you know, one was started as an initiative to help restaurants when there was no dining in allowed and that kind of thing. And I think it's actually kind of just become almost accepted now, even for anybody as part of a delivery package from restaurants,
totally.
Is the availability of that.
Yeah, that's totally something I've done over the course of the pandemic, and I've talked to so many restaurant owners, and we've had many on the show who are mostly, you know, they do a lot of their sales in liquor. That's kind of
right.
Been a lifeline for them through all of this. And so they're happy as you see other states pass the same. Some of them have made it permanent. I think Florida has, but Illinois is saying, you know what, we're going to extend it for another couple years and see how it goes. Hey, Rick,
yeah.
Can you hang on a second? I got to pause for just a moment here, and then we can pick things up on the other side, because there is a lot to report out of Springfield as they end the spring legislative session. And Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune can fill us in a little more after this. Hey, this is news. Governor Pritzker was just asked if Illinois is ready for Phase 5, Phase 5 being fully reopened. And his quote was, "We are, and in fact, it's scheduled for June 11th. So 10 days away, Rick Pearson. How about that? It's right around the corner. Amazing.
Who could believe it?
Oh.
I mean, it's just, well, this has been almost like it felt like a decade, hasn't it?
Didn't it? The way it chipped away at everyone's lives and just where we've been and what we've been through. I get it. Speaking of who can believe it, I saw that Governor Pritzker's chief of staff also said there's absolutely no way in a million years, if you told me a year ago when all this was happening and hitting us, that we were going to come out in this kind of fiscal shape, I would never have believed you. As you pointed out to us just minutes ago, Illinois is on the cusp of being in the best fiscal shape it's been in years, thanks to the big federal funding and also the better-than-expected state revenue, far exceeding what they thought.
Really, it's the state revenue is, you know, there was that time, if you remember, 6-7 months ago where the governor was pleading with the Congress under the old Congress to please help the states, please help the states. And now that after the new Congress was sworn in and under Biden, now that $8.1 billion the state got is almost considered gravy. In fact, they're only spending $2.5 billion of it this year, and they've got 4 years to spend it, so they're holding that money down the road. But yeah, the tax receipts have been unbelievable. Part of that was by, you know, kind of budgetary things because the income tax deadline was moved, so the receipts come in at a different time. But nevertheless, Pritzker, in this press conference where he announced the Phase 5, also talked about how this really seems to be a turning point in trying to help a state that has always been a fiscal basket case, that this is a turning point into perhaps some stabilization here and curing some of the structural financial problems that exist. Having said that, the budget does levy about $600 million in taxes on the business community. Pritzker calls it closing corporate loopholes. Basically, these are changes that were adopted for businesses during the Trump administration. The state's income tax is tied to the federal income tax. This would decouple the state from the federal income tax for a variety of tax changes. And, of course, the business community isn't happy about that.
Yeah, we're going to talk to someone from the small business community coming up on the show about what this means, because they're saying it's closing corporate loopholes. I think the read from some small businesses is this is a big problem for them financially in terms of staying in business after coming off of the year they just came off of, too, that you're sort of allowing some of the tax deductions that they've had as they try to dig out of a nightmare to go away. So there are lots of sides to that story. Hey, just a minute or two left here, Rick, but I do want to ask you, you mentioned bills with bipartisan support were few and far between. One of them that seemed to get a lot of support was this ethics bill. I wonder what you make of this. This has been a long time coming.
Yeah, but you know, it isn't all of it's ramped up to be here. There's even the governor himself admitted that this is mainly a first step. There's still plenty of loopholes here about financial disclosure, about lawmakers playing and getting paid as lobbyists for other units of government. There's a 6-month door, revolving door clause that if you leave government, you can't turn around and become a lobbyist for 6 months. Well, most states that have a revolving door, it's 1 to 2 year ban. So this is a step. I think it's a very small step, and there's a lot more work that needs to be done when it comes to ethics and trying to restore people's faith in state government.
Yeah, if you look at here's my idea. Look at the ComEd indictment and work backwards and say, how did all this get allowed to happen? How did all these people get to do what they did, and sort of eliminate those possibilities? It doesn't sound like this is doing that. It sounds like it's a very, like you say, first step or just the beginning.
It's small steps. And when I talked about that energy bill later or earlier, you know, that's one of the problems. You've got ComEd that admitted with a $200 million fine that it sought to use bribes and other ways to try to influence Mike Madigan as speaker for favorable legislation. Now you have the state dealing with ComEd's parent company looking for basically an effort to bail out its nuclear fleet.
It's so complicated. I mean, how do you keep this straight with 1 hour of sleep, Rick? How do you do that?
I hope I did. I hope I did.
You did. You totally did. I wouldn't have known.
I appreciate it.
Thank you for joining, Rick. It's good talking with you, and hope you get some rest today. Thanks for sharing.
And as always, thank you.
We were talking about all that went on overnight in Springfield and how it impacts you with Rick Pearson earlier. Let's get a little more reaction. State Rep Dan Brady joins the show. He's in the Bloomington area. And I know it was a late night and early morning even, that I don't think things shut down even till like 5 or 5:30 this morning, but I appreciate you being on.
Well, Anna, thank you very much. Nice to be with you. And I departed Springfield about 2:45 this morning and right back in Bloomington close to 4 a.m., so it's nice to be with you.
You sound energetic despite all of that. Hey, what do you make of what has happened? And a lot has happened. What do you think?
Well, per usual, it's a mixed bag coming out of Springfield. And I was listening to your guest, Rick Pearson, a friend, earlier. And, of course, he's always hits the nail right on the head, and he did a great job of outlining things. But from the minority side of things, you know, we just had greater hopes that there was going to be the new promise, if you will, with the new speaker and a new day and a start of a new era. And that was going to be marked by transparency and bipartisanship. And that didn't occur, especially didn't occur in this budget process. Maybe there's some other spots of it occurring with rank and file on different legislation, which is good. But overall, the big picture of the budget, that did not occur. In fact, this budget had close to 700 pages and was dropped on all of us, meaning the Republican caucus, about 12:30, I think, yesterday morning. Days a little mixed up. I think it was yesterday morning. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's no way to do a budget process. And darn if we don't find ourselves in this trap every year, major things are left, like the budget, the BEMP bill, the Budget Implementation Act, to the 11th hour. In fact, even over the 11th hour, even over midnight. You've heard the old story of, you know, holding the clock till past before midnight so we can get the work done and turning it back. But this is another example of just the people getting the short end of the stick, especially of all times in a pandemic, of all times of what businesses and people and their struggles are going through. To put in a legislative pay raise in the budget, an increase of about $1,200 to every senator and representative, and then increase your district allotments. Not that we don't have districts that work hard out of offices and serve people, but probably an additional $10 million across the board on that for state and Senate. And those are the type of things that, boy, that money sure could have been used for something else, and will be, as far as I'm concerned. It just was something to behold that out of all this, somebody thought we deserved a pay raise.
Mm-hmm. I hadn't heard much about that till you just mentioned that now. That's interesting. $1,200 per legislator?
Oh, I'm sure you'll hear more about it. Yes, and that it was something that was, of course, when you have pages dropped on you, you don't find these type of things until you have the opportunity to go through things. And so roughly, you know, $1,200 from GRF, $213,000 more for the House and Senate salaries, and then, as I told you, probably $10 million roughly more for district offices across the state total. Think what that money could have done, be set aside for businesses that continue to struggle in this whole situation with this pandemic going on. And not only they can't find the help, but they can't keep it. And in my particular district, I've got businesses and owners every day telling me I close Sunday Mondays now. I just can't find the help. And then to look at our unemployment trust fund, which is $5 billion, that's with a B, in the hole, and you do nothing towards shoring that up in the state's budget. Our priorities need to be public education, public infrastructure, and public safety. And that's what the Constitution calls for, and that's gotten lost in as Rick indicated earlier. And then some of the what appears to be pork projects, as people refer to them as, using money from what was intended for other means for new legislative districts for the Democrats. There wasn't one Republican part of any of that, nor were they asked. And it just leaves a bad taste in your mouth. And so it's unfortunate. And then drill down to the budget. I mean, you've got a budget that's roughly $43 billion with revenue presumed to be about $42 billion. I'm not a math major, but that's still about $1 billion in the hole. And how are you going to fill that? So a lot of improvement is left for Springfield, to say the least.
Governor's office was saying that this is the best fiscal shape the state has been in 30 years. Now, they're not taking all the credit for that. They're saying the big federal checks and the COVID relief funding, $8 billion plus, and then better than expected state revenue is contributing to that this is the year when we're going to kind of straighten things up a little bit. I'm not hearing you lay that out exactly that way. Or would you disagree?
No, Well, the governor and I might have a disagreement on that. There's $8.1 billion from between the ARP Act, the American Rescue Plan Act, and the CARES Act. About $1.5 billion of that was spent in this budget, and that's got to be directed over the next 4 years. Using those type of funds for things that are important, like some of it was, to our industries and hotel, lodging, motel, healthcare, our hospitals, public safety, et cetera. Those are all areas that are well deserving of it. But some of that money could have been directed towards the $5 billion hole in the unemployment trust fund. And that's probably one of the biggest issues in the last few months that I've dealt with as a state legislature is people in the unemployment and the inefficiency of that office and just the simple inability of anyone being able to get a hold of anybody. And that's why our offices, not only in the beginning of the pandemic, all the way through, have stayed open trying to help people. I mean, it's just a lifeline to people to think you actually answer your phone.
Well, it's been a nightmare for so many people, and we've heard from them, too, the folks who are just relying on that to get by those checks when their business is shut down, their jobs are shut down, and they can't get a human to tell them why their family doesn't receive a check for months and months. And now we're hearing that this summer, finally, although I haven't heard a date, maybe you have, this summer, I'm told, the state unemployment facilities will finally reopen, something I've talked about on the show. I don't know what we're waiting for. You've got Secretary of State's office that's been open for how long? Correct.
Correct. And to their credit, but the unemployment of all things that people need. And so my office became the quasi-unemployment office in the 105th District. Well, that's okay. I'm there to help. But the reality is, we don't know some of the answers to all of those questions, and my colleagues, Democrat or Republican, face the same thing. And so let's get it open as soon as we can. We've talked about this in Springfield. We've pushed for it, and businesses are saying, give us some way we can also tell unemployment when we give somebody a job and they don't show up, we can let them know, and please don't continue to pay them for not coming to work.
You know, bribery and the ComEd scheme that was obviously something that makes everybody think about the way things have been done, the way business is done in politics and in Springfield. And it's yet another light. And this is a pretty dramatic one, I think, shining on corruption. Right. And you just saw Mike Madigan's chief of staff, that the news about him and the charges for him.
Yes.
Come in.
Yes.
I wonder, and you passed an ethics bill, but many are telling me that it sort of feels like a watered down version or a first step, I think, is the way Rick Pearson put it. How do you characterize it?
Well, it might be, depending on who you talk to, a first step, a facade. It depends on who you talk to. But I supported the legislation because it was a step, as Rick said, a first step. But we could have gone much further. In fact, we have in the Republican caucus. I think we've drafted more provisions and amendments to ethics reform bills than I can ever remember over the last couple of years. Simple things from the revolving lobbyist door and how you come out of the legislature and how soon you can get back into lobby. And more in-depth backgrounds when it comes to financial disclosures, similar to what a judge has to go through. On their financials. Those are simple things, and it still didn't get to the degree and drill down to the degree that we felt that it should have. And so, obviously, more work to do on that. And there is other areas that, when you come major legislation, we talked about the lack of what the change was with the FOID application process. The gaming bill was saved for the 11th hour. I mean, something as major as gaming, in the state, and you got, 20 minutes to do it at 1:10 a.m. I mean, it's just no way to govern.
Mm-hmm. I wonder. I'm still trying to absorb everything that happened. We're all trying to make sense of what how it impacts all of us because there's a lot going on. I heard there were no tax increases. Am I right about that? Or tell us what you know.
Well, that's what people would like to say, in particular, the majority party, that there's no tax increases here, but there's about $600 million more taxes on businesses because what happened a couple years ago, we in the House Republican caucus in particular, and our leader Jim Durkin, navigated through and cemented a deal with Governor Pritzker on rolling back what we call some of these, what's called some of these business loopholes. And now, after doing that and giving votes for then a capital bill to help our infrastructure needs, a gas tax, if you will. In doing that, the governor has seen fit to go back on and pull the rug out from some of these things, which like reinstating the owner's franchise tax on businesses making more than $1,000, capping the amount of losses businesses can deduct. There's several things in here, depreciating purchased assets. That means those businesses have to pay those taxes. Those taxes come out to about $600 million more, and guess where that's going to go? In the budget for wasteful spending.
Interesting stuff, and I guess it'd be hard to roll those back at this point because I just wonder what impact it's going to have on the small businesses. Who's going to be harmed the most? And we are going to talk with a representative from that community coming up on the show, so we'll learn more about
they're certainly going to be torpedoed, and you're right about that. I mean, they're certainly, and of all the times they do it to them, my Lord, in a pandemic. It's just that's the stuff that leaves the bad taste in your mouth, and it feels so frustrating. It doesn't have to be this way, but I'll let you peruse through the 700-page new budget as we all do the same.
This is why we have people like Rick Pearson. I mean, really, this is why.
Absolutely.
I care about all this stuff. I'm deeply concerned about the state of what's happening in our state and the new moves and that kind of thing. I was delighted to see the cocktails to go was passed, but that's a very small thing in the grand picture and very, very small thing. Lots
it's
more big things.
It's amazing what we can come up together on, isn't it?
Yeah.
It really, really
is. You said
is.
That
but,
right.
And, you know, I try to be an eternal optimist. I try and work. In a bipartisan fashion, and you have to when you're in the minority. You have to. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to our comptroller, Susana Mendoza, who was in my freshman class with me, paying down our debt load down to from about 17 to roughly $3 billion in unpaid mm-hmm. bills. Those are positive things. But
sure.
That's where you set priorities and you follow through with them.
Okay, we may make a little bit of news here if you answer this question the way I think you will. Let me ask you this, State Representative
sure.
Dan Brady. Will you mm-hmm. run for the Secretary of State's office in Illinois?
Well, certainly something that I've been exploring, I've been asked to look at, and I'm just honored that there's people that have particular respect for me to think I would be potentially a good Secretary of State. A lot of variables that anybody running for political office, no matter what level, has to research, has to look at. And, of course, in this situation, new maps being out there, you factor in a lot of things. But I've worked very closely with Secretary White in that office over the years. Most recently, just passed legislation that deals with our seniors and the ability to be able to remotely do defensive driving classes and receive discounts on their insurance potentially, and do something that hasn't been allowed that they used to have to go in the facilities for. And so looking at things like that, I've served in task force in the past with my background in organ tissue donation with Secretary White and was part of the first person consent. And certainly people think of driver's license and the facilities, and that's the number one correlation you put with the Secretary of State's office. But I'm looking at it. I've not made a decision. And we also have something to consider now under the new election bill, which is moving the primary back to June the 25th of next mm-hmm. year. And so all kinds of things to consider. But, you know, people think driver's license, but there's so much more else that office does. I mean, it's, the second largest state constitutional office that we have, and is visited by more Illinois residents, have interactions in their lives with that office than any other office in the state of Illinois. I believe my constituents have seen me as somebody who is constituent-driven, who likes to get positive results, cut the red tape of government, and streamline things in a process. And so online services would be important, but making sure we balance that with not having any more breaches of security and data problems in the office. But it's certainly something we're looking at, and it's a very, very vital office in the state of Illinois and touches everyone's lives, and it's something I'll continue to look at. And I hope I answered your question. Probably a little longer than you wanted to go on.
You sound more like a maybe, but yeah, you sound like a candidate to me. If I had to bet, the answer was maybe, but the yes in my mind is there. But I'll wait for the formal announcement. That's okay, Representative. We can do that. Thank you for joining the show today.
I hope one thing, my first time on your show, and I uh-huh. certainly hope I have an invitation to come back sometime.
You do, and if you want to announce here on the show, it's open. The phones are open.
I appreciate that so much, those are all big decisions, much like it was when I ran for the first time for the Illinois General Assembly, much like it was for the first time when I ran in county government as county coroner here in McLean County. And, having people think that you do a good job, You got to go out and prove that to them every day. And I'm just honored that some folks think you got to take a look at it. So that's exactly what we're doing.
Representative, thank you. Thanks for the time. It's good to get to know you a little bit.
Thank you so much. Have a great rest of your day. And I appreciate it. Look forward to coming back on.